Blog Talk Radio.
Dylan, driver of the Dallas Chevrolet, and you're listening to The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpain.
Live from Talladega, Alabama, you're in The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network. Big thanks to Talladega Super Speedway, track president Grant Lynch, public relations director Russell Brown. Purchase your tickets for the Winn-Dixie 300 on May the 2nd, the NASCAR Xfinity Series, The Geico 500 on May the 3rd for the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. Call 877-GO-TO-DEGA or visit TalladegaSuperspeedway.com. This is more than a race. This is Talladega. Let's bring in our Reverend, our official Reverend for the show tonight with the Pit Stop here in Spain on Speedway Digest Radio Network, Mr. Reverend Joe from out in California. Everybody, welcome Reverend to the show. Reverend, how you doing tonight, bud?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing good, and I'm cold. We're under a winter storm warning, Reverend.
Well, you live in the wrong place. What can I tell you? It only got up to 70 today, so it's a little cold here.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I heard that. But, yeah, me and Suzanne and I, we're going to make the trek over to Atlanta this weekend. We're going to go over and cover that race. Our good friends, Bruton Smith and Donald Hall, we got our media stuff, so we're going to go over there. I just hope we got good weather over there for Saturday and Sunday.
Well, say hello to Bruton for me. Known the man for a long time. He's a good man. But,
yes,
shall
sir,
we get this thing started?
Yes, sir. Crank her up, Reverend.
Okay. Lord, we come before you tonight, and first thing on our hearts is we ask you for complete healing for Kyle Busch. Help him through this tough situation. Be with him and his wife and heal his bones and guide the doctors and get him back in shape and back with us quickly. Also pray for both of the gentlemen who are taking places of both of the Bush brothers this next couple of weeks. Also, I pray for the truth to come out in full in the situation with Kurt Busch, and that whatever is true becomes evident, and that your will be done, Lord. And we thank you for all you do for us. We ask you to keep a watch over all of us, put your protection around all of us, keep us all safe. Watch over all the drivers, all the crews, all the officials, and all those involved with auto racing, which is a sport we love so much. Watch over all those all over the country that are racing and getting ready to race. We know as many accidents happen in the shop as happen on the speedway, so be with us all. Watch over our show and bless all of our people that watch over us, and be with everyone. And we thank you for sending your son to die for us. In Jesus' name, we pray. Amen.
Amen. Great invocation, just like you said, be with everybody that has got problems from this past week or, you know, the stuff that has went down. But, yeah, thank you again, bud, and you want to let everybody out there know where they can follow you at on social media?
Yeah, you can get a hold of me always at ontrackwithjesus.org, And my email is ontrackwithjesus@aol.com. And always available. Glad to talk to them and pray with them and be with them in any way we can help. Looking forward to going to Vegas and next week. Trying to raise up the funds for that. Those things can be helped with small donations through our website. And we'll be going to Vegas to visit with everyone. It's going to be a tough few weeks for us because we've got three events in a row out here, which makes it a little tough. We used to have some spacing between us, which gave us some time to get our funds back up each time. But we'll get there. It's in God's hands, and I know He'll take care of it. But anyway, we wish everyone a great weekend, and we'll be praying over everyone in Atlanta and so on. So you guys have fun, huh?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Reverend. And say hello to Rob, too, for us. If you can find a milk crate or something out there, get a milk crate for him to stand on where you can take a selfie.
That's what I almost had to do last time, but we will definitely do that. And hello to everyone else. And you just have a great weekend and stay out of trouble, though, will you, please?
Yes, sir. I will definitely do that for you, Reverend. And tell everybody I stuck away on the West Coast. We said hello, and y'all be safe making all them West Coast trips, bud.
All righty. God bless. Have a great week.
God bless you, too, Reverend. See you, bud.
All righty. Take care.
Okay, that was our good friend, Reverend Joe. He's always agreed to come on that. He is a... Reverend Joe is Johnny on the spot. I mean, since we got him from the Reverend, I mean, he told me a story a while back. He actually was running late getting home and had to pull in a Walgreens somewhere out there in Riverside, California, and go in the bathroom and lock himself in the stall where he could call in. Now, that right there is dedication. At this time, I want to bring on my good friend, CEO, SpeedwayDigest.com, Mr. Stephen Wilson.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Come on up in this house, bud. How's it going?
Man, I can tell you what. I am tired. I hurt. My feet are blistered up. I feel like I'm about to fall over right now.
I bet you are, because I can tell you worked your hind end off. But Suzanne and AM, they was chatting back and forth, and AM told Suzanne, said you was like a kid in a candy store down there, bud.
Yeah, kid in a candy store, exactly. I wish I could do it more often.
Yeah, I do too. I wish we all could, Stephen. But yeah, thanks again for taking time out to call in. You know, which you are my co-host. But yeah, thanks again. And I know you've been at Daytona for Daytona Speed Weeks and got a lot of information. And before we really dig into, I mean, we could probably, you know, we got a 2-hour show. We could probably talk to midnight about all the breaking news coming out. And I had some come out a while ago. But I don't know if you met my good friend Roddy Maglock. He was in Daytona also, and he has agreed to come on and join us. You know, we didn't really wasn't going to have really like a driver guest or anything. You know, me and you talked. We wanted to talk about everything that went on from Daytona because there's so much to talk about. I keep harping on that, but can you hold on, Steve? Let me bring Rowdy on. We're going to bring Rowdy Maglock into the pit stop with Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Hey, Tim Ray, and Steve, how are y'all tonight?
Boy?
I'm doing great. Steve's just glad, he'll just be glad I left some candy in the store, because I tell you, it was one awesome week for me down in Daytona.
I know it was, Ryan. I know it was. And I don't know how long you were there, but Stephen, I think Stephen flew down Thursday and then come back Monday, but maybe next year me and Susanna get to make that trip down. But Rowdy, I'm going to let you and Stephen have the floor since y'all were there at Daytona. You know, we got everything to talk about with the Kurt Busch, the Patricia Driscoll accusations. I'm going to call them accusations. I'm not going to call them charges of domestic violence. And you got Kyle Busch and his deal with the safer barrier. I'm just going to sit back a little bit and let y'all have it because y'all was there. Y'all got all the straight on information. So, Rowdy, you and Stephen have at it. I'm going to kick back and I'll jump in when I get ready.
All right, Tim, thank you. Steve, I got down, yes, actually, I was there Wednesday
when they opened up the garage for the ARCA. And I actually stayed till Sunday morning after the Sprint Unlimited, and it was absolutely awesome weekend. It was a great weekend. Temperatures were perfect for racing, I think. It was perfect.
It may have been good for the Unlimited weekend, but I can tell you the first two nights I was there, Thursday night and Friday night, I about froze those two nights. And then Saturday and Sunday, there were actually decent weather for both of those events. I want to get your take on the Daytona 500, what you thought about that. And I know that there are a lot of people don't feel that it was as good of a race as we've had in the past, especially because I think they went about 84, 86 laps before we even had the first caution of the day out there. So the pace is pretty intense out there. Being able to cover, when I looked at the scoring monitor, they had covered 74 laps in about an hour and 12 minutes, which is almost unheard of most of the time in Daytona. But just want to get your thoughts on the race in general and what you thought about the ending there.
Steve, I tell you, I heard people saying that it was a boring race, but I tell you what, when you get cars going around the track three wide and they're deep, look like they're eight rows deep, three wide, going round and round and round, you know, the wind the wind was probably kicking up. I don't know how the guys keep the things on the track with the way the wind was blowing. But I thought it was a great race. I mean, I sat here and watched it. When they got three wide and they just kept on three wide over and over and over, to me, that's racing. I don't like to see one guy grab hold of the lead and he's a half a lap ahead of everybody. I mean, that could have been anybody's race at any time. And I just kept waiting for the big one. You know, they all hollered the big one. And if the big one happened, they would have been some small teams would have probably filtered through and won the race.
Well, I think that's an excellent analysis of it. We were right on the front stretch there on pit road, and I happened to be standing on top of Cole Witt's box there for a little while. And I tell you what, those guys, when they came through, you're right, they were three, four wide, eight rows deep in there. It was just insane to be able to see something that close. TV really doesn't do it justice when you see it that way, but being so up close and being able to see it like that just really gives it a whole new depth of perspective on how close those guys were, because some of those were, you couldn't fit a Coke can between two of them as close as they were to one another, not only bumper-wise, but side-door-wise. And every time they came by, we'd turn around and we'd look at the big screens out there and be like, yep, this is the lap. This is the one there. They're going to pile about 15 cars up. And they kept on coming. I mean, that was like a freight train coming around there when they come off turn four up to the trial. But it was amazing to watch. I've seen races at Daytona live multiple times. And you got to give it to every driver out there for being able to do what they did, keep those cars under control. There was a little bit of side wind coming off the ocean out there, so those cars were jostling around a little bit, so it really was intense to be able to see something like that up close.
Well, you know, that flag is in the south end of the track, and you can, it was blowing. If I went back and actually played it back into slow motion, every lap that they made, it was almost a wreck, but the cars just wiggle and touch and touch. I'm impressed with the driving. I mean, it seems like the drivers have stepped it up, even in the ARCA. You know, the ARCA race was a pretty clean race, and they run pretty tight. That Elmore motor, you know, it won the race. I mean, it's hard to complain about the Elmore motor for the 396, but it was just people to say that wasn't racing. That's why I go to a race, is to watch it. Two and three wide packs run.
You're absolutely right. Over the last couple of years, the drivers said the intensity level as well as the skill level has gone up such an incredible amount. You take a look at 2014, the ARCA race, there was something like 13 or 14 caution flags during that event. This year during the ARCA race, we had single-digit
exactly.
Caution flags. So, I mean, it's, you know, we're seeing the level of competition going so between what the drivers be able to do with these cars, no matter whether they're on the restricted plates or not. Just definitely being at Daytona, it just throws a whole new monkey wrench into the entire way that they're out there driving. But you really see it in those drivers that they're able to be out there to control those cars, because I know from my vantage point, and I didn't get to see the whole track, but from my vantage point, when they come off that banking off of turn four and come down through that tri-oval, there's a little bit of it changes pitch right at that point before it dips back up right at the start-finish line. So to watch those cars come and flatten out a little bit and then, go back up on that banking right around the tri-oval and then back flat just a little bit before they hit turns one and two, it really shows that those drivers and the intensity. And no matter, I think, what was it? Saturday they had a number. There was like 70-some-odd cars that had been wrecked through Daytona Speed Weeks. But to really watch those guys come out there and do what they did on Sunday and not really pile one another up. I mean, there was enough wrecked cars as it was. A lot of money had already gone down the drain, and there was no sense to do it on Sunday.
Yeah, and Stephen and Rowdy, if I could I jump in for 1 second? I just had a thought come to me, so let me throw it out there before it leaves and go some yonder away from me, if that's okay. while we're on the 500, I want to throw this out there. I sent a statement from Steve O'Donnell. He was catching some flack on social media about them throwing the caution there at the end after the green white checkered gentleman. And do you think NASCAR made the right call for us throwing the caution, or do you? I'll throw it to you, Rowdy. Or do you think the wreck coming out of two was far enough out of the way for the drivers to get it welded up whenever they come around and took the checkered and went into one and two?
Well, after the wreck that Kyle had on Saturday, I would have loved to have seen it gone green all the way. But after watching the wreck, after seeing what happened to Kyle, sometimes you got to throw the caution for the safety aspect of it. I like to see I hate to see a race end under caution. I didn't pay to go see a race under caution. And when you win a race under caution, it's like kissing your sister to me. But Joey Logano had a fast car, there's no doubt. There's no doubt Joey had a fast car. Dale had a fast car. Dale just can't get nobody to run with him. I don't understand why they will not race with that guy. He'll race with everybody else, but nobody wants to race with him. It beats all I've ever seen. I'm not picking sides of nobody. I like them all. I mean, really, I like all the drivers. I try not to be pinned down, but if you'll watch Dale, Dale will get behind and draft and push people, and nobody will. Seems like nobody will do it.
I know it.
And Dale had the fastest. I believe Dale had the fastest car all weekend up until race day, and nobody would run with him in the pack.
Yes, all the whole Hendrick stable was fast, Rowdy. But I'm going to throw that same question back over to Stephen right quick, Rowdy, before we get off on something else, and then I'll jump back out of the way. Stephen, what's your take on Steve O'Donnell and NASCAR making the decision to throw the caution there on the green white checkered? Which the rule states on a green white checkered, when the leader takes the white, the next flag ends the race. Wanted to clarify that for some of our listeners, but just like Rowdy said, and I will agree with Rowdy, as far as safety, yeah. But do you think, they had a good little time to get woeled up. Do you think that was a good call by Steve O'Donnell and NASCAR to throw that caution, or you think they should have let them race back to the checkered flag?
No, I think in light of what happened on Saturday with Kyle Busch, I think that was exactly the correct call. I do think that, however, on the flip side of that is Kyle had not had the incident that he did on Saturday. I believe NASCAR would have probably let that thing go all the way to the green, because they wrecked coming off of two. They were down the super stretch. Most of them by that point, by the time the caution came out, most of them were pretty much out the way. And, you have a mile and a quarter, a mile and just a little distance between the start-finish line and the backstretch. that you can get slowed down onto that where it would have avoided an issue there, especially with, you know, drivers that had spun coming off too. But, you know, in NASCAR, you looked back at Saturday, and I think that they did exactly what they felt was correct at the moment. And you can't blame them for it. You know, we've seen in the past where NASCAR has let it go green all the way to the end, and there's been a smaller distance in between the start-finish line where the incidents are occurring. I think just a lot of it, it really just came away from the Kyle Busch incident on Saturday, if nothing more than, you know, the safety aspect of it all from that perspective in NASCAR and the way that they officiated it.
Yes, definitely, Stephen. I'll agree with you and Rowdy both. Y'all both hit on the same deal. If that wouldn't happen Saturday, maybe, I don't know. But anyway, I'll step back out and let y'all go ahead. I just wanted to throw that in, and whenever y'all start talking about me, I just want to throw that in. I had it on my mind, but y'all go ahead and talk about what all y'all seen at Daytona International Speedway, and I'll step back away.
Steve, I can't believe that that of all the improvements at Daytona, that we still don't have a safe barrier in the infield. I just can't believe that infield wall wasn't, or at least, I mean, they had those tires stacked up from the Rolex, but it seems, and you know, NASCAR does a great job on safety, but it always takes an accident to get something moving. You know, it's like when Mark Martin slammed it, was it Michigan, when he come in and he slammed into the pit wall, and if he had a bit, that when he hit that wall, if it had been a foot farther into the door, up the door, it could have seriously injured, if not killed, Mark Martin.
No, absolutely. You know, every innovation in the sport, in motor racing, motorsports in general, over the years has come at the expense of somebody else either being hurt or being killed at an event. I mean, look all the way back to 2001 when Dale Earnhardt Sr. died out there, and within a matter of a few races, they were already saying you've got to stay buckled, you've got to have a Hans device. They started putting in more safer barriers. But what I think to your point is that you take a look back at last year at Richmond. Richmond is a fairly small track, 3/4 mile, pretty much the entire thing is lined with safer barriers. Well, Jeff Gordon came off right off of the backstretch, heading into turn 3 and slammed the inside wall right at the end of pit road for the entrance. And there is no safer barriers there. Well, it shook him up a little bit. It hurt his back up a little bit. And then within a matter of hours after the race, you know, they were already announcing that they were going to go ahead and complete the project, put safer barriers up. You know, one thing that you have to look at when you do this is there's been costs that have been thrown around as far as this safer barriers are concerned. From what I know about the safer barriers are, they're around $550 per linear foot. That's a major, major expense when you start talking somewhere like Daytona International Speedway, which have thousands and thousands of feet worth of wall that have to be covered in this stuff. Granted, you know, NASCAR has to do everything in the name of safety that they can, and they've done such a phenomenal job over the last couple of years. They've changed greenhouse sizes. They've changed so many things within the cars, the structure, the Gen 6 car that they've got out there. But, you know, it's the cost of this is so outrageous to put this stuff in at somewhere around $550 per linear foot. So when you start thinking thousands of feet of wall, not only at Daytona, but Talladega, even small tracks such as Martinsville and Richmond and Dover and those types of tracks, there's still thousands of feet of wall that have to be covered with this, not only on the inside, but the outside. But it also, you know, in my opinion is that, and it's been said so many times, that racing is an inherently dangerous sport. You can only do but so much to further the safety of the sport, to minimize and mitigate the injury and death that happen in this. But what they always say is, if it can happen, it'll happen in motorsports. And that's just, you know, the inherent risk that these drivers knowingly get into that car every single weekend, knowing that the potential of something could happen no matter what safety measures are in place. And I think it's the unknown that NASCAR and all the other forms of motorsports out there try to mitigate, but you just can't predict everything.
I've seen the figures today at $550 a foot. That's just that's outrageous. And I understand the cost. I mean, it's crazy. $550 a foot.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you take a look at Rockingham. Rockingham, when they brought the truck races back just a couple of years ago, the number that I had heard thrown around was there was somewhere between $4 and $5 million worth of safer barriers put into that place before it was even open. And I've been to Rockingham several times for all the truck races, the Can-Am events that they had there, the ARCA race they had there, and I can tell you, by no means, I would not say that percent 40 at maximum is even covered in safer barriers. So you're talking between $4 and $5 million at a place like Rockingham to cover maybe 30% of the track. You can only guesstimate how much it would be at a place like Talladega or Daytona or any of these other tracks when, you know, you're talking the outside wall is somewhere around 3.25 miles around if you would follow the outside wall. So therefore, you know, that's a lot of footage that you've got to put on the outside wall and then turn around and do the same thing on the inside wall.
Right. I was lucky enough to go to the last two NASCAR events at Rockingham. That was an awesome track. It's an awesome track.
Most definitely. You know, I've never seen any better racing than happened at Rockingham. I remember when they used to run the Winston Cup Series there, I was fortunate enough to be able to go to all the events, NASCAR, K&N, ARCA, that they had when they reopened for those couple of years. And, you know, they really put on a show out there. It just goes to show you that, you know, there needs to be more tracks similar to Rockingham out there for these drivers to compete on instead of – and I'm not downing one specific track out of the other, but if you take a look at somewhere like California where, you know, you've got a 14, 15, 16, 17-second lead, and the leader is a half to three-quarters of a lap ahead when they take the checkered flag. So, I mean – you know, I don't think it's so much the track. I think it's just the design and the way that, you know, the racing is produced there versus a place like Rockingham. And we need to see more tracks like that, little closer quarter racing. And I hopefully with the changes that NASCAR has made this year, we'll kind of bring the field a little closer together at some of these tracks that would inherently have those 14, 15-second plus finishes.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Steve. And Rowdy, I totally agree with you too. Now, this is Tim. I'm jumping back in. just to throw that out there, you know, you're talking about bringing back these tracks. And, you know, Rowdy said he was there for the last two NASCAR races at Rockingham. Steve, I'm gonna go ahead and tell you, just gonna make a little funny right fast. If my lottery ticket hits and if I win a bunch of money, I'm gonna buy North Wilkesboro and we're gonna fix that up and you're gonna be general manager at North Wilkesboro.
Come on now. I don't know too much about running a racetrack. I know the PR side and things like that, but I don't know too much about running a racetrack now.
Well
I
don't, NASCAR was the infrastructure
either,
that killed.
If we win the big Powerball, I mean, you can still have a title of general manager. We can pay somebody that knows.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's plenty of guys around. There's a lot of people around that know enough about running racetracks. I'm sure we'd find somebody out there. But talking just a little bit back here about Rockingham real quick is, you know, there's been some speculation on what exactly is going to happen out there. They've got a group called Vet Help that has decided they showed up in court right before it was to go to the auction block, said that they were going to go and get the money for it. And, you know, it's a strange situation because the guy that runs this Vet Help organization, he's got these grand plans of coming to Rockingham and building these condos and building all these things out there, but not once has he been in the media and said, hey, I want to bring some racing back here. He's got all these grand plans. It sounds like he's more he's got a great organization helping veterans coming back, you know, from overseas and those that have been disabled. But at the same time, he almost sounds like he's more of a land developer than he's willing to actually run any races there at Rockingham.
Yeah.
Well, it's in the middle of a sand trap.
Okay, Stephen. Rowdy, have you read anything on that group? Stephen was talking about, me and Stephen were talking about that back before Christmas, I think. Have you seen anything on it, Rowdy?
Well, I'd seen that it was going up for the auction, and I didn't know if it had been bid off. But in 2004, I tell you guys, I was lucky enough to have worked in Bennettsville, South Carolina. And Bennettsville is 32 miles from Rockingham and 22 miles from Darlington. And I was fortunate enough to meet Harold Brazierton Jr., whose dad built Darlington Motor Speedway, and Rockingham. They run a rock and gravel trucking company. And that's how they built those two tracks. That's how Mr. Harold started that. They were hauling sand and gravel to Myrtle Beach. And they made their money. When Myrtle Beach started developing, they were trucking all the sand and gravel from Bennettsville. And, you know, Mr. Harrell come up with the idea of building Darlington. And I was at his son's house, Harold Jr., who has done passed away also. And he gave me, I've got several. Actually, I have a rotor phone that belonged to Mr. Brazierton himself, Harold gave me. And it was incredible. It's just part of the story of what has developed into my racing life now, Tim. You know, just to be able to listen and talk to this guy at a campfire, what used to happen, and went to two of the Darlington races with him. And Mr. Harrell had not been to a camping. He actually went camping with us. We pulled the campers over to Darlington and went camping. And he had told me then, he said, I hadn't been camping out here in over 20 years. But it was an incredible experience just to listen and see all the memorabilia that Mr. Brazierton had. I actually got to see the big Rebel flag that flew at the Southern 500. And that is a monster flag. I'm glad they got the Labor Day race. I hate that we're losing, that we lost Labor Day at Atlanta, because Atlanta's a 3-hour drive for me. And, you know, it's close to you, Tim. But I like to see it back. I'm glad they got it back in Darlington. I hate they lost two races a year.
I am too, Roddy. But, I mean, you know, that's just the Labor Day weekend. Stephen will agree, too. Labor Day weekend it's just been set for Darlington. And I've told this story, you know, you told a story about that rotary phone, you know, back in the day, and I've told this before, but I'll make it short and sweet, about people that you get to meet. Back in 1983, that was my first race that I ever went to, was here at Talladega. But myself and some of my high school buddies, we used to check out of school here, and NASCAR and ISC would let us sit up in the Union 76 balls here at Talladega, you know, during practice and qualifying, but we couldn't sit up there during the race. They had to have a NASCAR official up there. And we used to go to the office over there of Enoch Staley. That's where we had to go pick our headsets up and all that. And Pete Sutcliffe from Daytona. I mean, you know, Enoch owned Wilkesboro, you know. And I think I'm very privileged to have met Enoch and been a part of that. But I want to tell a quick story, and then I'll hand it back over to y'all. I don't know if Stephen knows about this. We were all four of us, myself and three of my other buddies, we checked out of high school. And over at Track Credentials, we were sitting there in one room waiting to get our headsets where we could go climb back up in the 76 balls in a spot. And a guy by the name of Rusty Wallace come in there. And I hope I don't get sued for slander, but I'm telling the truth. He come in there, and Pete Sutcliffe, you know, Pete and them, they were over the rental car for what they drove there. And Pete gave him the keys to his rental car. Rusty goes back out, and he comes back in, and you can see in his face, he was furious. And, you know, here we are, 16, 17 years old. Well, he had the keys to that rental car, and he just flung them and hit Enoch right in the chest. And, you know, Enoch was a big old man. He was older gentleman, but big. He had this old big high back black leather chair set there behind his desk. And he said, "I ain't driving no blankety blank green car." Well, we all looked over at Enoch, and Enoch sort of looked down, grabbed them keys. He slid that big black high back chair back. He swung them keys and hit Rusty in the chest. He said, "You drive whatever blankety blank car I tell you to drive." Yeah, I know. Well, hey, I'm going to hand it back over to y'all. Stephen, you and Ratty talk if I can. I got to go make a pit stop, and I'll be right back in just a few minutes. And if y'all go into some of the news that I don't cover or whatever y'all want to talk about, we got plenty of time, and whenever we want to stop, we can stop. But I'll be back in about 5 minutes.
Stephen, did you get to see the Sprint Unlimited? Did you get to watch
it? I did. I did get to watch it from the house. I was not down there for that, but I did get to watch it from the house. It was a fairly interesting race out there for the first race of the year. And I really thought that after watching that race, the Daytona 500, the intensity would be so much more than it was. I think that's what a lot of people were counting on after watching the Sprint Unlimited. And obviously, it already looks like that some of those hard feelings from 2014 have carried on into 2015. It didn't look like too many people have forgot what happened last year.
Well, Kevin Harvick, you know, he got caught up in a little crash early. Car was just as strong at the end of that race as it was when he began it, even when he had all his fenders on. I mean, he was pretty beat up there. I was standing between his pit. There was an open pit open. And I was in the open pit between Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick. Kevin Harvick's car was beat slap to death, but last two laps, he still had a chance to win. He was pushing.
Yeah, that was kind of amazing that we've seen that out of these cars over Speed Weeks this year. If you look back over the last 3 to 4 years or so, you take a car that had, you know, a quarter size ding somewhere in the side of it, and it couldn't push, it couldn't do anything. It was just really amazing to see what has gone into the difference of the cars this year, especially with the new aero package that they've got going on in these cars, that they're still able to be beat up a little bit, these teams. I'm going to tell you what, yeah, I was watching these teams thrash on these cars just. You know, you take a look at Ryan Newman. I mean, poor guy, you know, got caught up in the Daytona 500. But I tell you what, they were beating the living snot out of that car to try and get back out there. But I think it goes to the fact that this new Gen 6 car is producing much better racing than we've seen over the last 5 years or so in NASCAR, especially with, like I said, the new aero package out there where guys are able to give a little fender beat up, banged up, whatever, and still be able to go out there and compete with competitive time laps.
Well, I've seen it. I mean, I've seen it for myself. The cars were absolutely and 2 years ago, you couldn't beat. I mean, the car beat up like Kevin had on a Saturday night would have never. I mean, he would have been in the back of the pack. I think NASCAR's kind of hit it on this package. Now, you know, a lot of people don't. I just can't understand why they don't like pretty wide racing and bumper to bumper, eight rows deep. But it's, to me, I mean, it's what I pay to go see. I mean, that's what I go pay to see. And then it's up to the pit crews to get them in and out, and it's all working. I just think NASCAR has kind of failed on promoting, though, Steve. I mean, you've got to promote a race a little bit. I just believe, you know, there should be a little bit more promotion. And, you know, Phoenix, they claim they're selling out. Well, if I want to go to Phoenix, they've got a $25 ticket. And, you know, times are tough. Times are tough. Bruton yeah. Them offer a $39 ticket, but they're all sold out. If you don't grab them quick, they're gone. And then you're stuck with a $60, $70 ticket.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that goes you know, we're still, a lot of these tracks are still in an era that they built these tracks out over the 90s during the height of the popularity of the sport. You take a look at Charlotte, which is just taking down all the backstretch seats. The only thing that's left there is on the front stretch. And when we, you know, when we come back next year for the Daytona 500, the entire backstretch grandstands at Daytona will be gone. Most of the stuff on the front stretch will be gone. In fact, the tower up there on the front stretch that has been at Daytona for umpteen years will be gone. So, you know, we've got tracks that are moving things around, taking seats out, and they just, you know, you're right. There needs to be some a little bit stronger marketing. They tend to hear recently it's a lot of marketing to specific driver packages and things like that. For the average race fan that may not have a driver that just wants to come and show up, I mean, I remember the days that you would go to Martinsville, you'd show up at 8 o'clock in the morning, and they would have, you know, the backstretch seats in the family section for $20, and you could walk in, watch the race, and leave. And you know, even Martinsville, they've continued that tradition on in some sense. They don't use the backstretch as much anymore, but they still do have $25 seats out there that people can come and watch a race. And I think that's where they need to start marketing more to the families and to the people out there that you know, over the years have traditionally gone to more races, is to market back to them again. I know we've gotten in an era of NASCAR where, well, it's not only NASCAR, but you take a look at the NFL and any other sport out there where it seems like that they're going after the high-dollar fans, you know, the corporations, the people of influence that have money to drop $20,000 on a box seat. You know, but, you know, that may work well and good in the NFL or, you know, the NBA or things like that, but to continue the sport moving forward and continue with a growth again, they're going to have to come back and start looking at some of the blue-collar workers, the people that just do not have the kind of capital that it costs. I mean, I was talking with somebody this weekend where they were just shocked at, you know, an average speed week at Daytona is over $2,000 if you were to go to every event there. And that's what they're trying to market to. They want people to come and buy those $2,000 tickets, but they don't seem to be marketing the $80 tickets, you know, on Sunday. And when we went out to the track, we were standing on the grid, they were doing invitation, things like that. I don't know if you could see it at home, but there were sections on the front stretch that have typically in the past been filled that just were not filled this time. I talked to somebody else right before I had left here, and they said that the average ticket at Daytona between 2014 and 2015 had gone up 16% in price. And that's not, you know, that's not a sustainable level in this sport where people's incomes are relatively flat these days.
Well, you know, the working Joe, his wages hadn't went up, Steve. I mean, I know that for a fact. The average guy's wages had not went up. Sprint, when they come in there, Nextel, I'm just going to call it like it is. I think they wanted the wine and cheesers, and they wanted it to be people who could go to the and sit out and drink wine and listen to the motors. But, you know, those people get bored quick. And they have money to go other higher-dollar venues. Now, we started in 1992 at Talladega, and it started as a family affair. And my son and I still carry that tradition on twice a year. And it's, you know, I may go, we may not see each other during the spring, between the spring race and the fall race, we may not see each other for the whole 6 months. But I know in 6 months we're going to be together that weekend. And, you know, if you're looking for a good, clean sport that you need your kids to look up to some drivers instead of some of the NFL and NBA players, you know, it's in NASCAR. You know, kids to a race. Give them that experience and try to build on that. And you know, it's been successful for me and my family. Even my daughter, I can't wait till my grandkids. They're down at 7 and 8 years old, and they're looking at me now. Pops, when are we going racing? I said, I think we're going to take them to the ARCA race this year and kind of break them in and let them see what it's all about. They love seeing the pictures when I bring them home. But I just wish that people would try to get back. If NASCAR would get back and let us back in the gate, break the price down a little bit. I mean, you can look at the success of the monster trucks. They roll into town. They promote that hard the first or the last 3 weeks before the event. And you can buy a $10 ticket and get in there. I don't understand why ARCA don't do this. They sell out the house. The truck race or the monster trucks sell out at $10 a seat. Now, if you want a $30 seat, they got it. But all those $10 seats took up quick. You got to order them fast.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things over the years that I think that we've seen. And like of my previous comment, I don't think it's necessarily just NASCAR in general. It's all sports. You look at all sports, no matter any professional sport out there, it seemed to be a turn from, you know, wanting the families to come in, being able to have an affordable experience, to be able to come there, whether it be baseball or basketball or football or NASCAR or any of these sports. It seems like the leagues themselves seem just as happy to be able to say that, well, I had, you know, this celebrity there that spent, you know, $100,000, or I had this person show up. I don't necessarily care if my seats are filled up, because I know on the flip side that these advertisers are spending millions of dollars with me as a league or a facility that I don't have to sell the seats anymore. I can go to these advertisers and pull millions of dollars for something that I don't even have to fill the seats with anymore. And that's something I think that NASCAR needs to start taking a very hard look at, especially they've gone through a period where they had a tremendous growth in the sport, just tremendous growth. We saw it with the addition of facilities, the addition of seats. You know, Bristol at one time was selling out every race. Darlington, Martinsville, Richmond, you know, all these tracks were selling out. There was wait lists, there were lotteries, there was all kinds of stuff for people just trying to get into the door, and the prices were so much cheaper back then, comparatively speaking, to what they are now. And hopefully we've gone through a period where the recession, we're you know, some people say we're coming out, some people say we're already out. Well, I'm not an economist, so I couldn't tell you one way or another. I just know from my own perspective the way it looks. But hopefully, you know, now we've gone through a couple major sponsors in the sport. We've got another one leaving at the end of 2016. And hopefully the marketing department will be able to come to a sponsor and say, look, if you want to promote to families, this is your sport. This is where you need to come. Help us help you to promote this back as a family sport. Not saying that it isn't a family sport still, but we've all been priced out of the market for so long. And not only NASCAR, but other facilities. I look back as a kid, I would be able to go to, you know, Camden Yards in Baltimore and watch a baseball game for $10 or $15. And now an average ticket is $60 or $70 for one person just to get to the gate. So you've got to be able to go back and, you know, I understand it takes money. You've got to be able to continue operating these facilities. But at the same time, you have to draw the line somewhere. You have to re-look at everything you've done and say, how can we make this better? Not only for the sports, but the people that come through the gate, to the sponsors, because it makes for good TV. It makes the sponsors look good when the stands are filled and there's a product out there that people are willing to come and see week in and week out.
Well,
yeah,
NASCAR got the product.
Gentlemen, if I can I jump in? This is Tim. I'm back. And y'all were talking about ticket prices. And Rowdy, if I can, and Stephen knows where I'm going with this, our bread and butter, Talladega Super Speedway, the Geico 500, they have a Dell Jr. offer. Two for $88, two tickets for $88 for the Geico 500 this spring in the Lincoln section. So, I mean, that's a pretty good deal. I mean, you know,
It really is. $88 for two people, that's not a bad deal. I agree with you. When we were talking ticket package, that's exactly what popped in my mind when he mentioned about drivers. $88. It's a shame that Jeff Gordon didn't win so we could got it for $24. But for $88, it's a bargain. It is. And you know, Talladega still offers free camping. No other track offers free camping. And I don't understand why why people don't take advantage of the free camping. That's why, I mean, sometimes we're in the infield. A lot of times we're right across the street in the north park. And, you know, if you want crazy, you can go home farther back closer to the dirt track, and it gets crazy. It gets wild. But we stay up close to the front, and we kind of keep it somewhat rowdy.
Yeah, I understand, rowdy. Yeah. But yeah, back on that, yeah, that's I hate to keep throwing it out there, but that's mine and Stephen's bread and butter with Grant Lynch and Russell Branham. We promote everything that we can for Talladega Super Speedway because they help us out a lot. And you know, talking about getting rowdy and different things for situations and stuff like that, Talladega Super Speedway does have a family campground. And I know you know where it's at. It's behind turns one and two. They have campground.
We spent many a year in the family campground, but when my son turned 16, we moved out and we branched out, and it was actually on his birthday. It was when we was in the April. And I think it was on April 18th on a Saturday night when he finally turned 16. And you know, when you're 16, we moved out of family campground, but they have non-drinking sections, and then they have sections that stay up all night. And that's what I like about it. Talladega's awesome track. It's what's held my son and I together all these years, and we have some awesome memories from that.
Yes, sir. Amen. I do, too. And my dad took me to my first Sprint Cup race, which was 1983. And I'm glad that you brought that up, and I'm glad you let me come back in here. Yeah, I mean, there's places for everybody. If there's places where you can't drink, there's places where you can't smoke. I mean, I don't condone anything that anybody does, but Talladega Super Speedway does a great job of dividing everything off and let everybody have their spot. And just like the big one on the boulevard is coming back, and Stephen Wilson. I forgot to tell you, I talked to somebody, we're going to get the tire guy on. I think DC at Talladega Super Speedway, she's going to try to get with him, and we're going to get the tire guy on one night. But anyway, gentlemen, I know we're on all this, and Steve, I know you normally don't stay on but an hour, but would you like to stay on a little bit longer and we can talk about some of the news? I hate to break in and change the subject because everything's going real good, but yeah, I want to talk about some of the news out of NASCAR, Steve.
Sure, we can run through a little bit of that here real quick.
All right, 10-4, Stephen. I'll let you go first. I know we can start with the duels with the little run in with Danica and Denny Hamlin, and we got the Kurt Busch deal, which NASCAR has indefinitely suspended him, and it has went through both appeals. And what else we got? We got Chevrolet announced that they are no longer affiliated with Kurt Busch. But, Stephen, you go ahead because you've had more time to study everything and out from Daytona, and then we'll get Rowdy's take on it. Go ahead, bud.
Well, I think the biggest issue that a lot of people were still talking about in Daytona is the whole Kurt Busch issue there. You know, when I showed up there on Thursday, his car was on the track. He was racing. By Friday night, he had been kicked out the sport based on an opinion that had been filed earlier in the day by the judge in the family court there in Dover, Delaware. And to quote the 26 pages in there, a lot of it is very boring, very dry. But I think one thing that really stands out in those 26 pages that I don't think anybody else has really necessarily dug into or really have, made too much opinion about. The judge actually made a comment in there where he feels that there, quote, unquote, could be sufficient evidence in order to pursue a fair criminal case. Now, you know, coulda, shoulda, wanna, in most cases is so vague in this point that most other people would not think twice about it. But when you think back to what has happened with Kurt Busch over the last couple of years, people, I think, have a sour taste in their mouth of Kurt Busch because of what has happened at Richmond with the media there. It happened with ESPN during his stint with Penske. He was suspended at one time before. He's known to have an attitude. And I think that in the court of public opinion has already doomed Kurt Busch. Meanwhile, what nobody seems, and I'm trying to tread as lightly as possible on this, you know, I do not condone any type of violence against women, and don't get me wrong. But the biggest issue in this case right now is that the judge issued an opinion, said that could be enough evidence, didn't say there is enough evidence, and nor has the district attorney there in Dover, Delaware, actually filed any charges against Kurt Busch. Now, the conversation, you know, that was struck up this weekend is that you take a look at the NFL with the Ray Rice and some of the other guys in the NFL. NASCAR did what they felt was appropriate. And here we go again with what they felt appropriate, meaning as, you know, they have to make a stance. And Steve O'Donnell showed up in the media center on Friday night and said, look, we're not going to stand for, you know, violence in this sport. Kurt Busch has obviously, you know, in getting a protective order placed against him, has violated the rule book based on the behavior policies. And that is what we are suspending him for indefinitely. Now, you know, I was hoping that, you know, NASCAR would wait just a bit longer in this case and actually consult with the district attorney there in Dover, Delaware to find out how many charges are going to be levied against him, because it could come out that once the investigation by the district attorney is completed, they may not even file any charges against him. They may drop the case and say, well, we can't find enough credible evidence that would support a domestic violence charge. So therefore, you know, what does NASCAR do then? What do the sponsors do? What does Chevrolet do? Now that they've cut ties with him, what happens next? Because he's already, at this point, he's exhausted all of his appeals process within NASCAR, the Motorsports Appeal Panel. He went back to the commission and said he wants to appeal that. They denied his second appeal. And now his attorney has come out and said, look, we're going to, you know, we're going to fight this. We believe that we have enough credible evidence to show that she lied on the case, on the stand during this hearing. And we're going to fight this in court. So, you know, I would like to know, and I guess, you know, this is me just in my opinion, what happens next? What happens if the district attorney says, look, I can't find enough credible evidence to charge him with anything, and they drop the case? What happens then? Obviously, he can't go back to Stewart Haas Racing because Chevrolet has dropped him from and suspended him from racing in their vehicle. So what does he do next? He's not welcome back at Roush Fenway Racing. He's not welcome back at Penske Racing. He's not, you know, some of the other teams that he raced for after he was suspended, they've closed up shop or they've sold off. And, you know, what happens next? What does he do next? Do they just say, okay, look, at Stewart Haas Racing, I'm going to put you in my F1 car for 2016? Or what happens next? And I think that's the big question right now, of what happens next if this issue is not pursued in a criminal matter.
Yeah, Dave, I'm with you.
Just to touch on the statement that you had made. Well, first off, listeners, I want to let everybody know the opinions made by myself, Stephen Wilson, and Rowdy are only opinions. This does not have anything to do with Kurt Busch. This is our opinions of whatever that has happened. And Kurt, driver of the number 41 car, was found to be in violation of section 12.1A, actions detrimental to stock car racing, and section 12.8, behavior penalty. And Stephen, you touch on a very good thing. I mean, our good friend Bob Pockers, I don't remember which track it was, and you remember the confrontation that Bob and Kurt had there. I mean, which he had sort of calmed his attitude down some. And I totally agree. I'm not taking up for Kurt, because anybody that lays a hand on a woman, why don't you come lay a hand on me, and by God, I'll take care of it. That's just not in my vocabulary. I do not like it one damn bit. But from what I understand, you're talking about the NFL thing with Ray Rice, this domestic violence stuff. The NFL did not handle that correctly, and I think Steve O'Donnell, Robin Pemberton, Kerry Tharp, everybody at NASCAR said, hey, we got to nip this in the bud, just like Barney Fife always said, nip it in the bud. We got to stop this now. And like you said, Stephen, there are no charges, but there are allegations. And I'm going to throw it back to you, Rowdy. Go ahead, bud.
Well, I was fortunate enough to be at Richmond in the September race, and I was a guest of Patricia and Kurt. And you would have never known anything was wrong. And a lot of people, NASCAR jumped the gun on this. You're innocent till you're proven guilty. And I'm like, Steve, what are they going to do now when they figure out that this lady is vindictive and wants to ruin his career? How are they going to back up and change all the wrongs here? And I've got a wife, I've got a daughter, and I've got a granddaughter, and they better not, nobody, no man lay a hand on them. But I just think NASCAR jumped the gun. Now, Rice, it's on video. We don't have nothing as clear-cut as what the NFL has. All we've got is accusations. And the second thing I want to know is, if they were having a little bit of problem before the race, how does she just walk into Kurt's motorhome and start telling him what's going on? I think, first of all, if me or you walked in there, who's going to jail? Somebody's going to leave
me
that.
Me and you.
That's exactly right. So, first of all, they should have not jumped the gun. Second, she had no business back in there because they were having problems to begin with. Hey, listen, though, she was as nice to me as I've ever wanted anybody to be to. Couldn't believe that here I'm standing and we're getting a picture took at Richmond, and the next week they go and they say he's beat the crap out of her. It's mind-boggling.
I know it, Rowdy. And, like you said earlier, you're innocent until proven guilty. And, like I'm telling all of our listeners, SpeedwayDigest.com, the Pit Stop Radio, this is totally our opinions of mine, Stevens, and Rowdy. So, if you want to call in and give your opinion on the Kurt Busch and Patricia Driscoll thing, the number to call in is 215-383-3681. And, y'all, I know we're getting laid up into this show, but if y'all want to carry on some more, we've harped on that. Rowdy, you have anything you want to talk about as far as news, or you got the floor, bud?
Well, everybody, we've got the 14th of March, Arca Rose in down to Mobile, which absolutely every year it's been an awesome crowd, and they're doing the autographs on the causeway at the SS Alabama on the 12th, I believe. If you get this, that is something that you can grab your kids and run out to the causeway. It don't cost you nothing. You get to actually touch and see the drivers. And I invite everybody to come down. It's an awesome race. They're on the track. Tim, I don't know if y'all, Steven, if y'all been to that track, but it's as much Rockingham as you can get. It's a half-mile track, and they put on an awesome show.
Well, Rowdy, I would love to come down, but I have a conference on God Country, if I can say this, and y'all get mad if you want to. I got a conference to go to and on the campus of Auburn University that week, so I will be scheduled for that. Laugh out loud.
Well, then ARCA rolls into Nashville, the fairgrounds, in April. I believe it's April the 11th. I've never been. Steve, have you ever been to Nashville, to the fairgrounds?
I have not. I've been asked several times to come out there since they've reopened it here a couple of years ago after they went through all that bickering with the city. I've been asked a couple of times. I'd love to come out there one time and actually see it. Know a couple people that work out there, and it seems like a decent track to actually, you know, from what I've seen out there, to actually go and run an ARCA race as well as super late models.
I'm just glad they're going back. I've never been to the fairgrounds and looking forward to that race. Now, we was talking about promoting. Now, Mobile does an absolutely wonderful job in promoting ARCA in Mobile. I mean, they really do a great job.
Yeah, I've never been to Mobile either. I'd love to one day make it out there, but not yet.
And Stephen, are you good for a while, or do you need to go? I'm going to let our listeners know Stephen's a busy man. He works during the day and he runs this SpeedwayDigest.com. Stephen, are you good for a few minutes, or do you need to go?
I think I'm getting about to the end of what I can talk about for the night. Appreciate you guys. Rowdy, appreciate you coming on. We had a good conversation tonight.
Oh, it was awesome. And Stephen, Rowdy, before y'all drop off, Stephen, do you want to let everybody know the deal with the 18, who's filling in? And I don't know if we talked about who's filling in the 41 for Kurt Busch. You want to throw that out there right fast before you have to go?
Yeah, so tonight Kyle Busch has been flown back to North Carolina. He's going to see a specialist there in North Carolina. In the number 54 for the Xfinity Series, Eric Jones will pilot the number 54 for the time being. As well as in the Sprint Cup Series, David Reagan is going to move over from the number 34 there at Front Row Motorsports and fill in for Kyle Busch in the number 18. They're talking about possibly 8 to 9 weeks at minimum before he will be back in the car. Ford and everybody has given their blessing to David Reagan to move over and fill that spot for right now. There has not been an announcement as of yet for the number 34 there at Front Row Motorsports for his seat that he's vacating for the next few weeks. And the number 41, again, this week will be filled by Regan Smith, and no announcement has been made past Atlanta. We should expect something here next week, possibly on who would fill in there coming out to the West Coast at Vegas, Phoenix, and Auto Club Speedway. So those things are forthcoming. Stuart Hossie's being a week announcement schedule as far as who's going to take over. I would probably foresee Regan Smith continuing to be in the car for the foreseeable future and plans moving forward. Well, if I have to guess, I think Regan Smith will probably be moving over full-time from Junior Motorsports to that number 41 for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I will agree with you, Stephen. And right off the bat, before I let y'all go, I'm going to read off the schedule of events from Atlanta. Friday on the 27th, Sprint Cup Series qualifying, all times at Eastern, 5:45 p.m., which Suzanne and I will be over there. We won't be there that Friday. We're going over Saturday. Radio's PRN, TV's Fox Sports 1. Saturday the 28th, Xfinity Series qualifying, 9:10 a.m., TV Fox Sports 1. Saturday, also the 28th, Camping World Truck Series qualifying at 10:40 a.m. Fox Sports 1 has your coverage. And also Saturday, Xfinity Series Hines 250. The race is 2 p.m. PRN has your coverage, and Fox Sports 1 has your TV. And later that afternoon, the Truck Series Hyundai Construction Equipment 200, 5:30 p.m. Eastern, MRN. Remember that, listeners. MRN has your radio. Fox Sports 1 has your TV. And then Sunday, Sprint Cup Series Phones of Honor Quick Trip 500 at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. PRN has your radio. Fox has your TV. Green Flag schedule 1:16 p.m. And Stephen, you want to let everybody know where they can follow you at on social media?
Yeah, you can follow us on Twitter at Speedway Digest and on Facebook, facebook.com/Speedway Digest. And don't forget to check us out at SpeedwayDigest.com.
Stephen, thank you very much, friend. Rowdy, you want to throw out where everybody can follow you at, bud?
I'm on Facebook at Rowdy Maglite and RowdyMaglite.com. Enjoyed it, guys.
Gentlemen, thank y'all very much. 10-4, Rowdy, I'll see you in Atlanta. Good night,
yes, sir.
Gentlemen. From Talladega, Alabama.
Shut up and drive.